I stand because it makes me honest. The sponsor told me that a long time ago. And then I get to see you sitting over on the steps, Emma, and I get to see you and call out anybody that's falling asleep and otherwise. But mostly because I get to see all your faces. Never Had a Legal Drink is my home group. My sobriety date is October 21, 1987. I was 19 years old on the 21st, what's the date today? 12?
9?
Okay. In a little while, it'll be my anniversary and then I'll be 28 years. And I'll do the math for you. I was 19 when I came in. That makes me 47 now. You can stop adding now. I'm 47. Damn it. I'm one of those old people, right? What strikes me is the same stories that I hear. It's like, I'm, you know, like 20-some-odd years ago, I was kicking it hard the same way you guys are kicking it hard now. So, but I'll give you my version of it, okay? So, I grew up in a lovely town in a wonderful state called Connecticut. And small ones over there. And I grew up in a home with lumpy carpets because everything was swept under them. And nothing was spoken. I had an alcoholic in the family and not a liquor cabinet to be seen, but liquor bottles everywhere in the house. Ironic, right? So when I say that, only because when I first came to these rooms and you guys said, be fearless and honest, I had the foggiest idea what you were talking about. Like, you may have just said another language from an alien planet and it would have made as much sense to me. So I recognize it as that, and I hold no accountability after that, right? Like, it's up to me. The last day was me doing things that I swore I wasn't going to ever do again. I was making consolations. I was making a run down to, like, New Haven, Connecticut. It was bad. And I was with a neighborhood buddy of mine who was on a relapse, fresh out of rehab, and we had decided to pull off on the highway, the Merritt Parkway. It's a lovely stretch of highway, as I like to explain, with trees and paths that go to rivers, and it's not a cool place to party, but nevertheless, Joey and I thought it would be a terrific idea to do this on this night. And here we are, partying our normal ways. I'm making consolations for things that I said swore I wasn't going to do again, and he looks at me and he says, I know there's a meeting. Maybe we should go to it tomorrow. He's like, dude, why would you ever say something? Here, just keep going. And we did, and we went, and the next day I went to work, and I was on lunch, and I was doing again what I swore I wasn't going to do again, which was get loaded during lunch. And the thing of it was that I wasn't getting loaded, like I wasn't catching the buzz. It had stopped working, which made perfect sense to me at the time. But now, when I look back on a 19-year-old boy that isn't getting loaded by trying to get high and drink, I mean, that something's wrong. So I remember what Joey had said the night before, and I was like, oh, there's a moment. Like, and then I raced back to work, and I used the phone. There were no cell phones back then, so you could not call until you got to a phone. And I called Joey, and he answered. Miracle. And I said, Joey, what about that meeting tomorrow? And it's like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm like, no, dude, you were talking about a meeting last night. It's like, oh, yeah. So I'll come and pick you up, and we'll party a little bit. If it's okay, you can go to your first meeting high. It's a rule. If you're in this meeting now and you're high, you're fine. If you're drunk, you're fine. Just stay. So Joey comes in, picks me up, and we get, you know, on with our little partying, and we're driving back to my house because I have to get ready for this meeting, right? And shower, pick an outfit, right? And I said to Joey, wouldn't it be funny if the cops pulled us over? And he said, that's not funny, you shouldn't joke about things like that. And clearly we had every reason to be in jail, but I remember pulling up onto my street, and my house was up on this little hill, and there are two squad cars sitting in the front of my house. Now, of course, we freak out, and I pull into the first driveway, and I'm throwing all my paraphernalia into my neighbor's bushes, and Joey's like, I don't want to get out of here, I don't want to be any part of this, and I drive him back to his house, and I drop him off, and I said, I'll call you when I know what's going on. And I had $60 in my pocket and half a tank of gas, and I thought, maybe I could just make a run for it. See, but the trouble was, I had already gotten a taste of what you guys promised here. And if you break the first three steps down as simply as I can't, you can, maybe I'll let you. I had tasted that when I had decided to call Joey to bring me to my first meeting. I had that promise. So here I was at a crossroads again, with the cops sitting in front of my house. Do I go and face, what do I do? Jails, institutions, and death, happy, joyous, and free. It's as simple as that. So I decided to pull back into the front of my house. Now, of course, I had it all figured out in my mind. The cops are going to drag me out of the car. They're going to throw me on the lawn. And then all the neighbors are going to know what's been happening. And then, and so I pull in front of the house, and I pull into the driveway, and they don't get out of the car. I'm like, crap. Now they're going to go, and they're going to wait till I get inside the house, tell my dad everything that I've been doing, and then drag me out. So I get there, and my dad's standing there, and he's not saying anything to me. I'm sweating bullets. I'm looking out the window. I'm like, what the hell's going on? And the two squad cars just pull away. There's no explanation why they were there. I do believe in white light experiences. I'm almost positive I don't know when I'm going through them. And it's usually in hindsight that it becomes very clear. And at that moment, that second time I pulled around, I had made one last little promise. And I said, God, please, just get me through this. I swear I'll go to this meeting. And I've been sober since. So I called Joey and I say, the cops are gone. He's like, great, thank God. Come and get me and we'll go. And I go to this meeting, and I was wearing my badass outfit, black leather jacket, acid wash jeans. 87, guys. And I was trying to be tough. I can only imagine what I look like. Oh, Joey was coaching me. So here's a guy, completely high, coaching me on the way to a meeting on what to do, right? He's like, oh, they're going to try to hug you. But it's not a gay thing. They just want to, like, you know, welcome you. And you know, oh, you should probably just get their phone numbers. They're going to give you your phone number. Just, you know, take their phone numbers, you know, and figure it out later. And he said, oh, you should probably get a sponsor. Kid's high. He's telling me to get a sponsor, right? But that was the thing. Joey was younger than me, right? But he was already carrying me. And I've been carried through this whole journey in all 27 plus years by you folks, right? I get to the meeting and they hug me, and the first guy comes up to me, gives me his phone number written on the back of a meeting schedule, and I said, will you be my sponsor? And his eyes light up like, I got a live one. Never called him. Yeah. But the point is that I was willing, right? You told me, I didn't know what to do, so I just did what you said. It was as simple as that. So life got really good really fast. 5 days into it, I had a girlfriend, irony, but nevertheless. She and Joey on Friday, that was Tuesday, Friday, Joey and this girlfriend say, we're going to a keg party tomorrow, do you want to come? And I knew that's not what I have been hearing from you guys, and I went out to my car, and I said, oh yeah, we'll talk tomorrow, and I went out into my car, and I cried my eyes out, because I was alone. That was my entire support group right then and there. And then the next morning, it was Saturday morning, and I had these pocket full of phone numbers, right? And I didn't know what to do, and I just started dialing. And I think I got to like the third or fourth number, and a guy named Jesse answers, this tall Hawaiian soft-spoken man. He's like, so how you doing? I'm like, I'm great. You want to come hang out? No, I'm busy. I got things and stuff. And he's like, yeah, my roommate and I are going to play basketball, and then we're going to go get breakfast. Do you want to come along? And he's like, no, I don't play basketball. He said, finally said, I tell you what, what's your address? We're coming to get you. And sure enough, he showed up and he pulled me and he let me sit there and just be. And he became my sponsor and I didn't let him out of my sight for the next 90 days. And we went to every meeting with him at that time until one day he said, oh, I'm not going to a meeting. I'm like, what? You're not going to a meeting? So no, I'm going to a GSR meeting. You want to just come in? I'm like, well, I'm not letting you out of my sight. I'm coming with you to a GSR meeting. Insanity, right? But that was my first introduction to service and all the wildness. And I was driving across the state to be in front of all these other people. The fellowship there. Okay, let's just timeline this for a second, guys. Oh, I didn't time. You're going to have to keep me on time. 1987, salt and pepper, push it good, raw base, it takes two. Okay, Google it, fine, you don't know what I'm talking about. But anyway, it was about the dance, right? Saturday night, where are you going? You're going to the dance? I'm going to the dance. Where is it? Oh, it's on this side of the state. So you're going to drive all the way across the state. And I'm telling you, I drove from one end of Connecticut to the next, and I went to dances. I got shanghaied into it, and I'll tell you about that story a little bit later. Oh, I will tell you this. Just say yes. That's the thing. Somebody says, you want to come? We're going to this nightclub down in the city. Little 19-year-old Robbie from Connecticut is invited to like jump in a car and go on a road trip and go down to St. Mark's Place. And there was a server club here, and it was two townhouses on St. Mark's Place, steps painted blue with like slogans of AA painted on the, and there's only a couple nods here, but nevertheless, there was a place and it was real. And down below those stairs, they held dances. And I would remember I wasn't such a good dancer, but Alina was really good and she would learn the steps and we're learning the step that they were doing side by side and like, you know, sway and back and all of this good stuff. And we decided we were going to learn that step, and we brought that back to Connecticut, and we were doing this. And as it turns out, about a decade and a half later, I was talking to somebody about this, and they're like, oh, yeah. The dance was the electric slide. This was the birthplace of the electric slide. No shit. The name of the night, the server club was like Electric Something. I can't remember, but never. Anyway, just say yes. You could be legend and you won't even know it. Okay, so life gets good, all right? So, and things go on and life becomes full and romance and finance become part of the equation, right? And I hope all of you have all the happiness and love and money and make millions and do it. Just, however, the promise I was always held is whatever I put in front of my sobriety will be the first thing that I lose. Now I was like, yeah, whatever, right? Like, that's great, but I have to go to work now, right? And this is my warning. So I moved to this city, right? This godforsaken city of ours from Connecticut. And I'm going to meetings, and I had about 8 or so years. And you people weren't doing it right, and nobody was talking to me, and there was no fellowship. And then some guy in a suit yelled at me for spilling coffee on the floor and not cleaning it up fast enough. Don't you know how much sober time I have? Who are you? I'll show you. I'm not going to go to meetings. 4 years.
Oh my God.
That's the truth of it, right? I was really busy. I was not so busy. I mean, I was folding sweaters for the Gap, for Christ's sakes, right? But it meant, I mean, it was enough to not make me go to meetings. And I was in a relationship, and I was living, you know, here in the city. And it came to a point where I was on the 42nd story, on my balcony, trying to make it look like maybe I fell off. I didn't want to get loaded. I knew better than that. But I just didn't want to be anymore. I was not in the middle of the boat, which is a favorite expression of mine. I was hanging by a pinky on the railing. And of course, I called one of my guys from Connecticut, and I told him everything that was going on, and he asked me, well, when's the last meeting you went to? I said, obviously you're not listening to me. That's not it. And he said, well, why don't you try? And Smart Feet took me to the next meeting, and it was a meeting on the Upper West Side called CPW. And lo and behold, it was a meeting that was just like the meetings they held in Connecticut, and had a break and a coffee, and you know, they served crudité, and they don't sell, anyway. And I didn't know how to feel like I wanted to fit in. Like, I just wanted to feel like I belonged again. So the only thing that I remembered from my past was to just ask if I could be of service. And I asked them, could I be your greeter? And they said, yes. And then I asked them if I could make their coffee, and they said, yes. And I became their overall chair. And then I fought slowly got back into the middle of the boat again. It took a long time to get back in the middle of the boat. Don't get out of the middle of the boat. It's easy. It's a fade out. It just happens to us, right? So service brought me, I lived on the Upper West Side. I couldn't imagine ever trying to figure out how to get down to 25th and 8th Avenue to this meeting that I kept looking at. It's called Never Had a Legal Drink, right? Because it's like, oh no shit, that's me, right? But I had forgotten that. It was like Peter Pan syndrome, right? Like, I was Wendy, I forgot how to fly, and eventually, I walked into this meeting called on 25th Street, and I looked, and I was like, oh, right. I totally can remember how to fly. I totally remember how to, like, focus on the person that's in the back of the room with their head shoved in a cellular phone, hiding, right? Like, these are the things that I was taught. These are the things that people had done for me. So why wouldn't I do this again for somebody? Why wouldn't I be? So it's like, you guys taught me all over again. And for there's a lot of good older statesmen in this room right now, okay? And for those people that are in this room right now that are elder statesmen, the kids need you. And I promise they'll fill your soul. And for the kids, go get them. Don't let them out of your sight. Nag on them. Pull on their coat strings, please. So, why pod? Let's get to that, right? Because here we are on the verge of having the Eastern Area Conference of Young People at AA in New York City. Okay, I also sat on the host committee. Oh, Marshall was like head of security for Inky Pod. I'm just saying, that was an intimidating force, right? So, right? So if you're not involved with that, you're not quite sure how to get involved with that, ask any one of the people that are raising their hand right now that are part of this host committee, okay. They will help you. They will encourage you. They will show you the way to, you know, being of service. Service makes you cuter. Don't know what that means? I will be happy to explain that. The legacy of this meeting was started on the promise that there weren't enough young people meetings in New York City. NISKIPA was the New York State, which is now since disbanded. New York State was having was bidding. So here they are. They all go up to Albany. I was not part of this. I was on my hiatus, folding sweaters for the Gap. But I have dear friends who were, and they went up, bidded, promised that they would start a new young person's meeting because there was only two. Yes was one of them. Young People's West Side was the other. And they came back, they won the bid, they had the conference here, they held the Saturday night dance on the observation deck of the World Trade Center on the 4th of July, boom, right? Like, it was so major, right? Like, against all odds and advisory and everything like that. And so this host committee, and they both have been in this meeting, and they, these two people that were the party throwers were have spoken here. One did not get recorded, unfortunately. And so many legacies of people who were part of this group, part of young people's AA, have gone on to do really big things. One of them became is a chair of the delegates, and you know, big shit, right? But the thing that hit me the most, and this is the story that I'll leave you with, and this is a metaphor that I like to use, is, you know, we're all just tossing stones into the water. And the thing about tossing stones into the water is the ripples go. And you don't see them and you don't know where they're going or how they're ever going to come back. But one of the stories that was told was this, and one of the people that was hosting this conference was named Julie. Julie's a sweet young girl, and she did speak here. And she started crying during her, and she helped start this meeting. And she started crying during her qualification, and I couldn't quite understand why she was so emotional about it, but she said, I just can't thank you guys enough for being here. Because the thing of it is, she says, I have a daughter that's 13 years old, and she may need to come here. And that was, in my mind, a ripple coming back. I'm sure at 16 years old, when you told Julie that this is what you're going to be doing and this is why you're going to do it, she would never believe it. That's one of those, like, life beyond your wildest dreams moments, right? But here she is. She threw the stone in the water. She threw an epic dance. And then 20-some-odd years, 16 years later, there may be a promise for somebody else to be helped. That's why we're here. That's why we're doing it. If you're going to do service and it's going to make you cuter, great. But let me just tell you, it may save your life in so many ways. So when you ask me to stand here and speak, of course I will. Thanks.